You're listening to The Community Show on 10 Radio on 105.3 FM with Ellie and Pauline. Taunton Deans First Citizen, Councillor Vivian Stock-Williams, is now joining us in the studio because she is Mayor of our district for this year, and it's a pleasure to welcome her into the studio today. Good morning, Madam Mayor.
Good morning, Pauline.
It's lovely to see you.
Great to be here.
Since you became mayor in May, we've met numerous times, but we haven't had the chance to interview you on 10 Radio to speak about all sorts of things mayoral, but more importantly, you. So it's a lovely chance to do that because you've been mayor since May, so a few months, as it were, into the job, but you've a whole bunch of seasons to go, and I know that we're going to see you as well at the end of April, just before your mayoral year finishes. But it would be nice to talk to you about how you're finding the year. But first, can we go backwards and talk about you? Because your career is basically science-based. You are a science enthusiast, you're a researcher and so on. And I'd love to know a bit more about how you began on that course.
Well, when I left school, I went into nursing because from a young age, I was taught that I should do something vocational, and this was of service to people in the community. So I trained as a nurse at St George's Hospital when it was still at Hyde Park
Corner. I remember when it was there. It was such a busy point, wasn't it?
It was.
On that huge roundabout.
Beautiful chapel, and one of the chaplains there now lives in Milverton from that time.
Of course, it's
a small world.
Yes, Ian Ainsworth-Smith, of course.
So after finishing nursing, I joined the Chester Beatty Cancer Research Institute, which is attached to the Royal Marsden Hospital in London, and studied immunology for a time, looking at a particular blood protein that rose when animals had cancer. At the time, it looked like an improbable idea, but as time has gone on, this has proved to be so and an important basis for future work in diagnosing cancer.
Because we're talking here about, I mean, not to pinpoint years specifically, but we're talking about the 60s, 70s.
We are
when
indeed.
Our awareness of cancers and so on was so much less than it is now.
It was. In many households, cancer was not a word that was spoken about except
Never.
In hushed tones.
Yes, yes.
So after that, I decided I needed a new challenge, and I joined the Medical Research Council Statistical Research Unit, which was, again, in London. It was in Gower Street. And although I didn't know it, this was an important move in my life because I joined a team that had received the Nobel Prize for proving the causal link between smoking and lung cancer. Mm. So I was right there at the heart of epidemiology and learning it with rigour, enthusiasm, passion. Time meant nothing to us. We just worked together on this important work, and at the time it was not accepted, particularly by the tobacco companies, as being important work.
Of course not.
Or work that had much foundation, which meant it had to be that much more rigorous, and it's a training that's I've kept in my heart throughout the rest of my life. You have to be sure of your facts before
sure.
you state them.
It's really strange to us now because, well, we think we know everything now, don't we? And the internet and so on gives us access to everything. We're all so knowledgeable, but it does still seem staggering that at that time people did not connect cancers or illness with smoking. And historically, also, everybody used to smoke. And our parents, for example, in that generation all smoked. And it was the thing almost to do. It didn't have that taboo element attached to it yet, did it?
So no, it's very strange the way it was regarded, even by doctors, as somehow a salve for ill health.
I think doctors were some of the worst offenders, weren't they? They used to smoke and drink like and smoke.
That's the interesting thing. This study that I'm talking about had the cohort involved was every single doctor registered in England. Mm. And they were followed up for 20 years before even initial results were published.
And that's
and
what
then they
you,
carried
the group
on decade after decade.
Yes.
So that we learnt the long-term effects and not the instant effects, whatever they might be.
Was there any other group of scientists working on such a study elsewhere in the world at the time, at such a rigorous level, whether people in America or Australia or wherever doing this?
Not with such rigour, not with such numbers, and not over such a long length of time. But when the results started to be published, then research money started to be available so that people in other parts of the world could carry out this work, because it's so important it can be replicated anywhere, just in case there were causal factors involved that we hadn't taken into account, environment, genetic or whatever.
So your hub really became a centre of excellence for people to sort of hone in on and learn from.
Oh, absolutely. It's still quoted as the definitive work on smoking and lung cancer.
And how, I mean, without confusing my simple brain with too much science, how did you find the connection? What is the connection as opposed to other causes of cancer from smoking?
It was the fact that more people over long term who had smoked, as compared with controls who hadn't smoked, developed certain illnesses. That's the way epidemiology works. That's why it has to be long term. And it was taken into consideration other factors, like whether they'd had family members who developed lung cancer. So was there a predisposition, or had the family members smoked? And then later, of course, you had to take into account passive smoking.
Well, that's true.
Which was never even considered. No. They thought there was a genetic link where it might have been an environmental link. So that's why it's so complex and so fascinating to talk about these things, research these things. And it's a privilege, actually, to be able to have ideas, think that something might be important, get the research money, and then see whether or not it is.
Yes. Did you find at the time, I'm sure you did, it might be just a rhetorical question, that the cigarette manufacturers were deeply negative and didn't want anything to know, and to get to the stage now where we have cigarettes sold behind covers on counters, or, you know, labelling and all of that, and all of that promotion of cigarettes and brand and image, did you find that a real barrier, or was it a gradual breaking down that you could see the end result?
The end result was to advise people of the link, not to, for us, to ban it. That was not the idea. It was so that people made informed choices, knowing what the consequences could be for them, for their future, how it wouldn't impact them for some time, but their aging years would be have so much less quality, the impact on their families, their earning capacity. So that was pointed out. And yes, the tobacco companies were not at all kind to us. But the one interesting thing is that one of the doctors who worked for them used to write to us every week protesting about the work in green ink. So it was always noticeable when the green ink envelope came in.
So Oscar Wilde wrote in green ink. Are we supposed to link something there between decadence and I don't know.
I don't know, but the green ink man was...
The green ink man was...
Typified the tobacco companies, yes.
So I guess, actually, what you did, you were doing the hard work and finding out the facts, and then the government was being informed by your reports and then put legislation into place over the decades. To limit sponsorship. I suppose all those earlier years where you saw cigarette companies sponsoring sporting activities, which seems absolutely ironic, doesn't it? F1 racing and all of those, they were all sponsored massively by the tobacco
companies.
It was
part of the good feel that they wanted to impart. It was part of, the picture of a better life with a cigarette dangling from your mouth, as in the films.
Yes.
But also you have to contend the fact that the tobacco companies were contributing so much to the exchequer. So it's that in itself was complex, and that was why that was not something that we as researchers would ever want to become involved in. We just plain facts, and then it's for other people to take it forward and work with them.
Yes. And does that research continue now?
It does indeed.
Does it?
It continues mainly in Oxford, Because after a year, the director of this unit was offered the post of Regius Professor of Medicine, Oxford, and he asked five of us if we'd like to go as a core team to start work there, continuing the work in London, but a new core. And being footloose and fancy free, of course I said yes, and moved there and worked there for 14 years. I took 3 years out to do a psychology degree.
As you do.
I went straight back to my former colleagues, but I was given my own project then.
Yes.
And that was looking at the long-term effects of hormone replacement therapy.
How very interesting.
And again, that was pioneering work. And still that continues as well.
It does, because actually every handful of years, the advice is completely reversed. And in fact, about a month ago, there was yet another report which came out saying, don't take, you know, the combined HRT tablets.
Yes, that's right. That's why it really has to be long-term work with robust results. Again, you get the drug companies doing short-term studies with a few people, and
which
that's not the rigor that I was trained in, and I don't think it gives you the robust results that we need to take forward with good faith. And, you know, the results of what we're doing. That's why we don't never publish too soon.
Mm.
We would give indicative results, but saying we were still looking at it.
We see in the press and so on lots of results of American studies or a new wonder drug found in America and so on and so on and so on, but it's not been accepted by the British medical establishment. And I suppose a lot of people who may be struggling with something or other that this appears to answer might say, why can't we get this in Britain? But obviously what's happening is what you're just saying. They may have done a study for 5 years, whereas here there may be a study going on for 25 years and the results are not conclusive, and
absolutely,
the risk is too
we
high.
We need to be sure we don't want another thalidomide.
Yes. Which was a short-term study?
That seemed like a wonder drug because it cured sickness in pregnancy.
And brought forth these tragic deformities.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that just shows why you need to be patient and why you need to be sure.
How very interesting. And the HRT angle still goes on, I suspect.
That still goes on as well, because you don't always know, unless you ask the right questions, you don't get the right results. Mm. We don't always know what you're looking for.
Mm.
It just seemed that with HRT, this was giving estrogen to people which had really, really good effects in the short term, but we needed to be sure that in the long term that there weren't any adverse effects.
But the advice does alter. I do note this, and it's interesting how it's not fixed yet.
It's not fixed, but sometimes you see if it seems to have adverse long term effects, you need to look at the predisposing factors. Has there been genetic similarities, that kind of thing?
Yes,
and that's something you can only look at when the further questions pop up.
Interesting. So all of that in earlier years was what you were engulfed in, much more than just a
job. Totally absorbed. Totally absorbed.
But in between this, you did manage to marry and have a family, and then you moved to the north with your husband's work.
That's right, yes. And I did, until my son was born, I did similar work at the University of Manchester, but we were living in the depths of rurality with a small holding, so we decided to set up our own small company there, and that meant I could work from home where my husband went out and about, and that was in marketing research, where the methodology was the same as I was doing in epidemiology, but the numbers were far smaller and the results far quicker.
And was that when you were doing that work in the generation of computers and email and research one could do online, was it easier to do than it had been a generation or two ago?
It would have been impossible, I think, a generation or two ago,
It is amazing how different things are now, isn't it, electronically speaking.
And I would not forecast the future.
No. Gosh, no. I mean, no. That's mad, particularly after the year we've had, I would say. We being, you know, the world.
Yeah.
But then you came to Wellington, where you still live, in 1999. So why the move here?
Well, my husband was asked to set up a department at the Hydrographic Office.
Uh-huh.
So we moved down gradually. because it was the time of foot and mouth, and I didn't want to sell our beloved Jacob sheep.
No.
But in the end, we had to, because everybody was overgrazing. Mm. We couldn't find the fields. So I came down, not knowing what I was going to do professionally or otherwise, and I popped into the CAB in Taunton because I had some surplus furniture. I still can't remember whether I'm sure they did tell me where to put it, but the manager popped out before I'd left the building and said, "Oh, we've just started an advisors group, training group this week. Would you like to join?" And so I thought, that's an opportunity I hadn't thought of, but I'm never one to turn away an opportunity. So I did. And that led to me becoming an advisor there, joining their staff.
What a very canny manager, because he saw a good person and grabbed them. Yes.
Some wonderful years there, learnt a lot about the local community, and I'm still a trustee there.
Mm,
so
brilliant.
It was the best possible introduction to the community.
Yes.
And you may not understand, but as an academic person, I didn't have much grounding in the common sense in the real world. And so I've learned such a lot.
It couldn't be more different, but again, hugely beneficial to people when you're advising them.
Oh, absolutely.
Oftentimes when they're on their uppers and at their lowest points, and you can guide them or direct them or signpost them to help.
Yes, and that is another field which is constantly changing because of legislation changes in the society.
Yes.
So it's always fascinating.
And it will change even more when universal credit actually does come in, if it comes in, and what will happen there? Goodness knows, but the idea is kind of good.
Yes.
But the doing of it is massive, isn't it?
You have to be prepared for reality as well as the theory of everything.
Yes. But Citizen Advice, of course, we know them well. Liz Fothergill has recently retired after many years running the Taunton Centre. But it's a very thriving group, isn't it? And it's needed everywhere across
the
country.
It's been needed more and more each year. And its credibility is so relied upon.
Mm.
You know, I don't know anybody who's got a problem wouldn't go to the CAB.
No.
To try and resolve it for them.
Mm.
And what the one change there has been over the years is that the caseload is now much more complex.
Yes.
So where people can help themselves, they advise them so that they can then go away and do it for themselves.
Mm.
And that in itself is good for people.
It enables them, makes them feel a bit more in charge, I suppose.
And empowered, yes.
Mm. But it's certainly true, everything. We find this with SAFRA in our casework, and we often liaise in both directions with Citizens Advice. But our cases are getting much more complicated. They're not the simple helping someone complete an attendance allowance form or get a new cooker. They're much more, it's a sort of the iceberg thing, you know, there's one problem, but underneath there are 10 others.
And you can only really help long term if you find out all the problems and complexities.
Mm.
So that, yes, you can tackle it as a whole.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? But you're still a trustee of that.
I am indeed.
And continue there, which is super. So how did you then get, it seems maybe a natural progression, but how did you get into local government?
I wish I knew.
you get nobbled.
Yes, you do. It seemed like another new thing I hadn't done, another way of engaging with the community. So that was probably why I did it.
So you started by becoming a part of Wellington Council.
I did,
and how long did you do that? Was that interesting, and did that grip you, trying to look at a town and how it's run and how to help people and make all of our living better?
Yes, I mean, I am still a Wellington Town Councillor. I was mayor there 4 years ago. There were parts of Wellington, although I knew a lot about it, I didn't know some of the places, and it gave me an opportunity to find out more about how the community in Wellington is so strong, so bonded. There's a lot of diversity there. There's something for everybody to become engaged in, and they do, which is why so many people choose to retire there.
Mm.
The young retired remain young at heart.
But it's not just a retirement place. I mean, like,
it's not just a retirement.
It's a working town, which is great.
Oh, absolutely. And the work opportunities are increasing as the years go by.
Mm.
So it is a vibrant community.
Mm. And although one might think almost too much house building is going on in some of our areas, this does keep community is refreshed and not allow the aspect to get too solid.
It is bringing in young families, yes.
Which is useful. But you have, on Taunton Deane Borough Council, you've been on so many different committees and so on, of which many of us are unaware. Gosh, I'm reading the CV here and there are just so many areas. Which over the past sort of say 5 years have you enjoyed the most or the least? Maybe you're not going to say.
I think Corporate Resources, which had so many of those committees, was an absolute eye-opener because it was many fields that I'd not actually dabbled in before. So all the time I was learning, and because you're learning, you become engrossed, involved, and I've learnt knowledge there that I can carry out into my other roles on committees, trustee boards, which has been invaluable. But I think the one I was most pleased about was when I was able to be the borough's representative on the Shadow Board of Health and Wellbeing, which then became Somerset Health and Wellbeing Board, and I continued that right up to my start of my mayoral year.
Well, that makes huge sense, because with your background, you know, what better, one better person?
Yes.
Can you now, Eddie? Excuse me, Mayor. Eddie's just stood up. Eddie, why are you standing up?
Well, I in the mayor's presence, she's always telling me to sit down. So I'm waiting for my instructions.
Only when your 3 minutes is up, Eddie.
We're not going to stand for 3 minutes.
So Eddie, being one of our two district councillors here in Wiveliscombe, is as if he's at a meeting. But
yeah.
You can sit down now, Eddie.
Yeah, thank you
is
very
that,
much.
Is that all right,
is that
Adam,
all right?
Please do.
Yeah. Oh, but no, Eddie and Steve Ross, our other councillor, are very good at representing our area. Over there in Taunton Deane, we try and make our voice heard, don't we? Because we sometimes feel a bit remote from Taunton-centric matters, I have to say.
But, see, Wivy time is a bit longer than 3 minutes.
Tis. It's about five,
yeah,
isn't it?
To get our point across, okay. Yeah.
The independent state of Wiveliscombe, as we're constantly reminded by
yes,
Eddie.
Yes, absolutely. We are a bit like that. But we hope welcoming and all of that, too. But what did that... that committee, what did it... Was it a new committee that you joined, the health and wellbeing?
That, yes, totally. It was a new way of involving the local councils and therefore people at a local level with distribution of the health services so that they could find their own priorities and then together work up the preventive medicine agenda. Now, in this area, Somerset, we've got a very ageing population compared with the rest, so one of our priorities is to keep the elderly living independently and healthily in their own homes for longer, because, again, it's that pyramid, even if you only look at it financially, and I don't, I look at it for person-centric, but it's much better to keep people living healthily in their homes for longer.
I think the big disconnect appears to still be when older people go into hospital and then they're discharged, and that period before they get home sometimes can be very, very difficult, or they're not discharged soon enough and they deteriorate rather because they're still in hospital but would best not be. There is that, and I think this is a national problem, and it's space and resources, I understand, but it's that, you know,
you're right, it's not yet right.
It's not good, is it?
It's not. But the whole emphasis now is going on to prevention, which is marvellous, because in social medicine, we always knew that prevention was not only cost-effective, but better than cure.
Mm.
So it's now putting resources into the prevention aspect, catching potential illnesses earlier so that they can be dealt with.
Yes, yes, which is the ideal, and so that's obviously
and promoting healthy living
so
many different ways, and we've got people like Tone Leisure really helping with that. They're doing a marvellous job.
That is good to know. So that's been a high point of interminable committee work.
Indeed.
Yes. And so on to your mayoral year so far. You began as our mayor in May.
I did.
And so it's been a very busy, hot jolly summer, and you've only just come back from travels to Germany. So it's been a bit sort of feet not touching ground, I suspect.
I totted up my engagements last night for you, and it's 4 months this week since I was elected, and this is my 196th engagement.
196?
Yeah.
So 200 in effect.
Yes. Yes.
In 4 months.
So, yes.
Golly,
no
that's
wonder I'm flying.
Yes. Yes, because if you stop, you would stop, so you carry on.
I shall stop in May of next year.
Mm. I think most mayors do say this, don't they, that it is just a back-to-back year, and then you go, phew.
Yes.
But you can't let up.
No, what I've done is I've given my PA my diary for the year, 365 days, and she fills it.
Yeah. Well, yes. So, I mean, does Christmas or families or home ever come into this? Or are you, in effect, saying I am available just about all the time?
Exactly what I'm saying. Just
yes,
about available
yes.
all the time. Yes.
Gosh. Now, your trip to Germany is, you've just come back from your Taunton's twinned town.
That's right.
So tell us how that went, and was that fun?
It was fascinating. The coach trip always seems a bit longer than one would desire, but nonetheless, we got back, were welcomed, had a good night's sleep, and were up bright and early the next morning because we were going to Berlin to visit the Bundestag.
Ooh,
which was the first time the twinners had been there, and it was an amazing visit. Not only had the organisers from the twinning in Königslutter arranged for us to have a meeting with an MP in the afternoon, which is really interesting, but we were able to see the new Norman Foster building.
Yes.
And
yes.
It is quite remarkable, full of light, so that everybody, as well, one knows, feels better when there's a lot of light and not dingy rooms, so it helps the discussion.
Mm.
It was a fascinating place, but the Bundestag has apparently gone through three changes. And after the war, when it was partly destroyed,
just a sip of water to help my throat. Yes.
It was just kind of plastered over everywhere.
Mm.
Norman Foster had all that plaster taken off to see what was there. And in a couple of places, the walls were absolutely filled with what you might call graffiti, with writings from the Russian soldiers when they'd taken over the Bundestag at the end of the war. And so they'd left them there as a reminder of that part of history of the Bundestag.
Yes. That I didn't ever hear before. How interesting. I've seen it from the outside when I was there, and because time was so limited, the queues for entry were too long, and it couldn't be managed. But I'd love to have seen inside, but the outside is impressive enough with the dome. But how interesting. And did you observe the chamber in action?
We didn't, unfortunately, because it was the first day back officially of Parliament, but they were all in their offices, sort of catching up with things, and it was going to start the next week, the next day, but it was going to, there wouldn't have been any space for us because they start off the new session with the budget.
Oh, gosh. Straight in.
Straight in with budget. Yes. So holiday over. But next time, they're hoping to book it so that the twinning trip can sit in a session
that
and listen.
That would make a lot of sense,
that
wouldn't it?
That would be wonderful.
Yes. That's interesting. And then the other parts of the trip as well. No doubt you were taken to many other civic sort of events and places. Is it the first time you've been to Germany?
No, I've been to Germany many, many times. As a Wellington twinner, I've been several times to Bavaria, which is totally different, totally different scenery. And it's fantastic there, but it was fantastic here. And there was so much history because it's right on the border of the old eastern border.
Of East and West Germany,
yes,
it was.
That's where Königslutter is. So there's a lot of history, and they're willing to talk about it. They show you the monuments. I learnt such a lot about what's gone on.
Yes.
And a lot of East European Germans have come to live in what was West Germany, in Königslutter area, and assimilated well, working well, and you wouldn't know until they spoke about it. So from then you can learn all about the history, what they've been through, and how they're just happy members of their new community.
Yes, because we can't imagine, I think, you know, how it was pre-Berlin Wall coming down and pre the Soviet system and the divided countries and cities. Amazing, isn't it?
It was extraordinary. I went through the Berlin Wall the week after it was put up. and the contrast between the bright lights of West Berlin then and what seemed like a grey graveyard in East Berlin has never left me.
No.
It was, and of course all the guns everywhere focused
and
on the people.
And,
it was remarkable, like going into another world.
So, but no longer, thank goodness.
No longer.
And our time is limited, madam. I'm sorry about this, but tell us, so far, apart from this trip to Germany, what other highlights have pleased you since May?
Every day pleases me, but there are two of great interest. And one is the mayor of Shepton Mallet decided for her civic event to take us on a tour of Shepton Mallet Prison.
Oh,
which was absolutely fascinating. You could feel the ghosts as you walked around. It's very grim.
It's a very old prison.
It's
too,
a very
isn't it?
Old prison, and it's been decommissioned now, and it's about to be a housing development. So it was one of the last opportunities to go around, although they are keeping part of it as a museum.
Interesting.
Yes.
Now, I used to actually go as part of my work with Jobs Centre Plus to Shepton Mallet, and once every 3 or 4 months, and talk to the new intake of lifers. Prison at the time had mostly people who had life sentences. I do remember the lead warden taking me past a wall, and there were like bullet holes in the wall, and he said, "Oh, that's where the Americans shot prisoners during
19 of them were executed during the war, and their bodies are still buried under the tarmac.
Good Lord.
They still
no wonder they need to retain it as a museum in part.
That's right, and they also had the room where the gallows was as well. And I believe the other thing about Shepton Mallet is the highest walls of any prison in the UK.
Really?
Only one prisoner ever managed to get over, but he hadn't realised, because of the different heights of the ground on either side, that it was much lower on the other side, and his sheets didn't go far enough, so he fell down and broke his leg and was taken back in.
I met some very interesting people.
So, what an interesting highlight. That's an unexpected one. And what's the other?
The other one was the Friday before we left for Königslutter. I was in London at the Mansion House, the invitation of the Lord Mayor of London for afternoon tea. He had invited representatives of all those counties, towns and parishes who'd contributed to the relief of the distress of those who'd suffered in the Great Fire of London 350 years previously.
Yes.
And in Somerset, there was just one place, and that was Taunton, that raised the magnificent sum of £190.
Really? 350 years ago?
Yeah, that was a lot of money.
A lot of money. And sent it to London
and
to help.
Yes, that's right, to help.
Gosh, I didn't know that either. I've learned so much this morning. How interesting. Gosh, that's wonderful, isn't it? We covered the Great Fire last year in one of our regular slots on researching history and so on, and fascinating about the rebuild of the city, but I had no idea that Taunton had sent monies, and the only place in Somerset.
Indeed,
well done, Somerset.
So when I have a moment, I'm going to look and see what the link was between Taunton and the City of London, because it must have been by subscription donations.
Through one of the lovely trusts, you know, the Heritage
Guild,
Trust.
Livery, maybe.
Yes. Of which there were many and so on. I mean, we look at John Popham in Wellington.
That's where I'm a trustee of the almshouses,
But all that money, which to us didn't appear much, you know, 400 years ago or whatever, is still bringing help and homes to people now.
Absolutely, to 12
fantastic.
People, yes.
Yes. Mm. Lovely. Well, there are a few unusual things, but loads more to come. We're very grateful to you for spending this time this morning to come and see us, because I know that, you know, the weekends are busier if
frenetic
possible than weeks. And Friday, in a sense, is a lead up to any weekend. Have you got a back-to-back weekend this weekend?
It is quite busy this weekend. Mm. The following weekend is when everybody seems to be holding their events, 24th and 25th.
Really, that's the activity.
Yes.
Well, actually, we shall see you again, because we're looking forward to welcoming you here on the 24th of September in the morning, Saturday, when we're unveiling the culmination of
I should be popping along
project.
From my 7:45 a.m. appointment for the Tesco Baton Run. They're for the charities. It's stopping off in Taunton and going off onto the next stop.
Oh, well, we're not expecting you any time around that time, or even just shortly afterwards. But it'll be lovely to see you again next week in Wivy.
Look forward to it.
Thank you so much for coming on Ten Radio today. It's been really interesting to hear, particularly your background in research and science, because that's, you know, just ongoing important stuff for every person. And to know that you're obviously enjoying the year. Well, I'm saying that. Are
it's
you enjoying your
year? It's a great privilege. Yes, I certainly am. So much variety and learning so much about what goes on within the borough makes it a strong borough. And everywhere I go, I pick up a little nugget, and somewhere I can plant it. And, you know, now I've helped out them to progress also.
Yes.
It's
well, how lovely. So by the time we meet you again next April.
We will. Could I just... I have three charities. One, and I have a charity Cayley coming up.
Uh-huh.
At Oak Manor on Friday, the 14th of October, 7 o'clock, and I'm hoping that many, many people will come along, not only to support the charities, but to have a great evening out.
Oh, how jolly. So Oak Manor on the 14th of October. And tell us your three charities you're supporting during your year.
I truncated Shakespeare's Seven Ages of Man into three. So for the children, it is the Children's Hospice Southwest. For later ages, it is Reminiscence Learning with their Intergenerational Archie project. And then for the moving from childhood into adulthood is the Somerset National Garden Scheme. Firstly, because they have an apprenticeship scheme, which drew me to it, but also I thought of you want strong seedlings to grow up as strong, vibrant plants in a mixed garden. And so that typified what I thought childhood into adulthood should be.
Perfect, and beyond. That's lovely. Thank you so much for coming on Ten Radio today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And when we asked you about music, you said the cello is your favourite instrument. And Eddie, I think, has found some music that we're going to play out with today. Eddie, what shall we hear?
Thank you. Yo-Yo Ma is a great cellist. And this is a lovely bit of cello music. This is A Swan from the Carnival of Animals by Saint-Saëns.
Thank you very much.